Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. This week we're going to be talking about a new standard that is going to change supply chains called EPCIS 2.0. It comes from GS1, the people that define all of the standards around products in the supermarket. And we're going to be talking to the guy who was instrumental in the creation of that standard, Dominic Gunnard, who also helped to author other standards, including Digital Link. He's an author. He's also a senior executive at Digimarc and was co-founder of Everything. He's really smart guy, great at explaining things, and really enjoyed this conversation with him. We explain what EPCS is, what the implications are, which are really significant for the world of supply chain and IoT. And we delve into the recent acquisition. Digimarc bought Everything, the company that he co-founded and was CIO at. And we also give a bit of a preview, some insight into a new product that we are evaluating here at Wiliot, which is built around a reboot of the physical web. So do listen in, and I think you'll enjoy this.
The Mr. Beacon podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, intelligence for everyday things, powered by IoT Pixels.
Dominic, welcome back to the Mr. Beacon podcast. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be on.
I always learn a lot. One of the joys of this show is, you know, I get to talk to super interesting people, and I learn something every time I do it, especially with you. This is actually the third time you've been on the show. The first time was back in 2018. If people want to go through the Mr. Beacon archives, they can. We talked about your book, Building the Web of Things. And then you were back 2020 talking about GS1 again, talking about Digital Link. So one question I have, and I guess I could answer this question myself, but I'm a bit lazy. So do you still have the things that are referenced in the book that you use in the exercise? Are they still operating at the Everything Lab in the East End? I assume that's where they were. Are those?
Yeah, actually, that's a very good question. Yeah, unfortunately not. And it happened a couple of months ago. Some of the components broke down, and We're looking to replace them. But it's pretty hard because we want to have the exact same components. And things have evolved so quickly that they are hard to find. But I think we've managed to spot them, and we're gonna rebuild it.
Yeah. Excellent. And we should explain what on earth we're talking about. So Building the Web of Things, give a 1 minute intro to what the book is about. But basically what we're talking about is the devices that you can use using web APIs, and you control physical things from your, you know, I was sitting in San Diego following these exercises. It was really cool. I was looking at a camera and driving actions and turning lights on remotely. But what was that book about?
Well, pretty much what you just said. So it's about using web technologies to build the Internet of Things, which I believe is the right way to build the Internet of Things if we really want to make it massive.
Excellent. But we're not here to talk about that now. We're here to talk primarily about EPCIS 2.0, which I think is a very significant standard. I mean, GS1 has some pretty significant standards in its portfolio, but this, I think, is really going to enable a lot of very important use cases that will make the supply chains much more efficient, which is essential if we're going to solve climate change and do it in a way that aligns people and planet and profit. I also want to talk to you a bit about the fact that you now work for a different company, but you never quit. Everything is now part of Digimarc. So let's talk about that. But so sound okay in terms of our agenda?
Sounds great.
Okay. So what is EPCIS? What is EPCIS?
So first of all, it stands for Electronic Product Code Information Service. The Electronic Product Code, so the EPC standard, is a standard that basically provides unique identities for items, in particular through RFID technologies, but it can be applied somewhere else. And the EPCIS standard itself is the information server that or the information services that you build on top of these unique product identities.
But as you say, the identities in EPCIS don't have to be RFID. In fact, one of the things that you just sent me, like, it's actually very distracting, a few minutes before the show, was you showed your company's product, everything integrating with Wiliot's sensors. And so it seems like it's an open standard from that perspective.
Yeah, it's definitely an open standard. Absolutely. And it's also not a new standard, but the version 2.0 is really a revolution in terms of what it brings and what it is.
Yeah. So let's come back to that, how version 2 is different to version 1. Because I think version 1, I was always a bit frustrated. I thought this is really useful, but I really couldn't find many people using it. There were people using it, yeah, but not as many as you would want. So we can get into why that's changed. But let's, you know, in this part of the, in our conversation, I do want to look at, you know, what it is and, you know, when it was originally conceived and how that's changed and where it's being used and why you would use it and how you would use it. And by some amazing coincidence, that seems to be a lot to do with the structure of the standard as well, this what, when, where, why, how. So maybe we should kind of go into that, and I hope I haven't made this too complicated by overloading the same words and using them for the structure of our conversation and the structure of the standard. But tell us more about EPCIS and the what, when, where, why, and how.
Yeah, so the core goal of EPCIS is to capture supply chain events in a standard manner. It's as simple as that. You have tons of events happening in supply chains, and nowadays a lot of them are not digitized, which is one of the reasons why supply chains are not that efficient or resilient to big changes, as we've seen with COVID and other events. So it's all about capturing the events in a standard way with the aim of interoperability. So really being able to share these events across partners, share these events with applications. It's basically a common language for things that can happen in the supply chain.
Excellent.
That's what it is at its core.
And so one of the things that got me excited is that in our, you know, the work that we're doing at Wiliot, we're looking to share information much more broadly and a richer set of information. So like sensor information, information about temperature excursions for vaccines or pork chops or, you know, anything. And, you know, micro location events, understanding when shelves are out of stock and this. And also, one of the things that became really clear to me was this needs to be shared. In the past, a lot of this information was kind of stovepiped, and the retailers had it, but they didn't share it either because, you know, there was some feeling that this was power that they didn't want to give the vendors. And I think more likely it was just too difficult to share. And so how can the structure of EPCIS help facilitate sharing the kinds of location and sensing information that I just described.
Yeah, sensing information, I mean, location was already in the standard early on. Sensing information is one of the news in EPCS 2.0. So we wanted this standard to support IoT use cases. For me, the Willot pixels were a source of inspiration because they represent one thing that I always thought was going to be a trend, which is that tags are getting closer and closer to embedded devices and vice versa, right? And so the standard is ready to support that by allowing to attach to events sensing data in a structured and semantically understandable way. So that really fosters interoperability.
Okay. So going back to what, when, where, why, and how. So how do you capture the what? What's the link there? I think you touched on it, but I just want to crystallize it.
Yeah. So the what is really the identity. Which unique identity did you see? And it used to, the EPCI standard used to support only one way of describing these identities, and that was using an EPC code. An EPC code is typically something that's stored in RFID tag, UHF RFID tags. Version 2 of the standard is actually supporting other ways of identifying items, and one in particular is using digital links. You can see that I've worked hard with the team to make sure that the two standards were basically compatible. And so, yes, so that means now you can address all kinds of things. They don't have to have an EPC as long as they have something that's usable as the digital link. Then you can address them.
Cool. So that's the what. And then what's the when?
The when is the trivial one. That's just a date timestamp, which is extremely important in the supply chain, obviously.
Yeah. And so that. Let's just expand that a little bit more. So I want to look at the time that a good moved from one place to the other, which can be important. If I want to get a picture of, say, some zucchinis, how long they were exposed to certain temperatures in a certain place, that would be...
Exactly. If you tie this... If you tie this with IoT data, it becomes even more relevant to have the when, definitely.
And how do you capture the where? What can where encompass?
So where are what's called in standard business locations. So they can be all kinds of places that you define as a company. So it could be a warehouse. It could be a particular production plant. And sometimes they're identified via GS1 identifiers as well, called GLNs, global location numbers. Mm-hmm. So you can also codify in a unique way the place that the event is happening in.
And so can a GLN be like hierarchical? So I have a place and then I have places within the place?
Yeah, you can have this type of hierarchies. Yeah.
Very good. So why? The why, that's less obvious in terms of EPCIS.
Yeah, so the why is primarily, and I'm oversimplifying here, right, because the standard is a pretty thick document, right? The why is primarily the business step. So which step in the business are you in when you are recording the event? Are you at quality control? Are you transporting the item? Are you recycling the item? And those, what's very interesting is that those terms are also standardized. And that's important because there are so many ways of describing a recycling step or a quality control. So they're also standardized in a companion standard called the CBV. That business vocabulary of terms, basically standardized terms. And you can extend it also if your use case is not supported by the CBV readily.
And lastly, how? What's that about?
Well, so the how is the IoT component. So that's about the context. So temperature, humidity, vibration, light level, anything that you can think about in terms of sensors. And again, there's a semantic layer to make sure that if you talk about temperature, typical example, there are so many ways, at least two ways, global ways of describing a temperature. And And so it also contains the units, and that's, you know, that's also standardized. So you have a pretty specific way of capturing sensor data.
So you've already talked a bit about the differences between EPCS 1 and 2, but let's come at this a different way. Why do you think that EPCS 1 never really took off to the extent that we hoped it would, and why are you more optimistic about 2.0?
And I very much hoped as well, right? It would. And I was listening to the Gartner provisions back then in early 2000, where they said, yeah, RFID would be present pretty much everywhere by 2019, something like that, right? Didn't really happen. And I think there were two main reasons. One, the standard is fixing. The other one, I think, got fixed by other powers like the COVID crisis and the climate crisis as well. The first one is simply what you mentioned, right? That this is information that companies are not necessarily willing to share too much. It's great to have interoperability, but you need to want to share this information and to leverage it across partners. And I think the world we live in, and especially the last 5 years or so, have really put a lot of pressure for this data to be shared for many reasons. The other one is just technologically, the standard was really painful to work with. And I actually wrote a paper in 2010 where I suggested giving RFID a rest. And that paper was one of the sources of inspiration for GS1 to launch this this standard, not the only one, right? But it was basically adapting the standard to web technologies because it was great in terms of the actual constructs, but the APIs were just so outdated and not reflecting the state of the web.
So the risk of being obtuse. So giving it a rest, meaning making it accessible via RESTful APIs.
Exactly. You got it.
Okay.
And that has been my mission in life, to bring all things to the web.
And then for anyone that doesn't know what a RESTful API is, what's that?
It's basically an API that is done really the web way. And today most APIs are built that way, are built using RESTful constructs. But back when the first versions of the EPCI standards were written, it wasn't the case. There was another set of standards that was dominating called WS Star Services or SOAP Services. Mm-hmm. That was more like enterprise-y integrations, which almost entirely died nowadays.
So we're optimistic. It's a better standard. The planet is in a stage where there's massive pressure on supply chains. There's war, there's famine, disease, and there's also new use cases like buy online, pick up in store and delivery that mean that we just need, and also environmentally, we're being held to high standards as well, and there's legislation that is driving carbon accounting and that sort of thing. Does EPCIS have a role to play in that, in the carbon accounting piece?
And I think there's one piece that you're kind of not mentioning explicitly, which I think is important, is the consumer push for transparency. I mean, there's a real push from consumers and brands who actually are transparent and provide accurate detailed information win nowadays, right? And that's super important because to be able to provide this kind of transparency, traceability information without doing like just broad greenwashing or kind of totally abstract ways of describing it, you need the data. And to have the data, you need to capture it, and you need to capture it in a standard way.
So that's one other big
aspect.
So EPCIS can be a means of tracking the carbon footprint, the actual carbon footprint, rather than the estimated carbon footprint at each stage. Is that fair to say?
It can be. On its own, though, there's no construct in the EPCIS standard that will let you just extract the carbon footprint, right? But you know where the goods have transited, and that's very useful. And carbon footprint is one aspect, but just the whole transparency around how is the item produced? Is it organic cotton, can you prove it? You know, these kind of things. I think carbon is one aspect, but there are many more aspects to a transparency use case.
Yeah, makes sense. So how does this compare to EDI? So I was at the GS1 Connect show in San Diego, just down the road from our offices. In fact, we had a group of folks from AIM and GS1 come to visit our offices, and we want to have more open houses like that. But I was at the show, and there's a lot of EDI players in the at the GS1 conference. How does EPCIS compare with EDI?
So I'm not an EDI specialist, right? I know EDI, but it's not something that I've extensively worked with. But the main difference is that EDI is really about you know, the transactions in the supply chain that are usually paper based. It's to digitize that, right? When we when you exchange goods with transporting from a warehouse to another place, and there's an actual exchange or there's paperwork that's done at the border, this is where EDI can help. EPCIS is a lot more granular than EDI because it's really capturing every single step, not just the steps that absolutely require paper trails. Mm-hmm. So EDI is a replacement for these paper documents. EPCIS is really, we want traceability across the board, the entire life cycle of the item, capturing every single step.
So it seems like EPCIS is a great complement to serialization, but can you use it without serialization?
You couldn't before. And the reality is that while the standard didn't allow that, what we discovered is that most users of the standards were actually also tracking JITIN level, so class level. Today, it can support it, and that's because of the Trojan horse that's in the standard, and that's the digital link, which basically can support serialized, but also non-serialized, or also partially serialized, as in batch level, for instance. So anything that the digital link supports today can be supported by the EPCIS. Having said that, you really unveil the power of EPCIS if you use item level. That's really when it becomes the most interesting.
Where each, it's not just I've got a SKU for a certain type of product. I've actually, every single product has a digital passport. It's an individual. You can see where it has come from, who's owned it, how many times it's been washed in a washing machine. Or I'm assuming EPCIS could support that. Like I want to record every time I've washed my my jeans or something.
Yeah, I mean, this is a use case. It's a use case we're not totally unfamiliar with, to be honest. Yeah.
Yes, you've got some great customers at everything, including a really great. I'm not saying that these guys are doing this. Quite the contrary. But serialization has been adopted by apparel companies. Let's say that and. You know, some great ones like Ralph Lauren, for instance, that have publicly announced they're using your product and serializing things. So let's see. Okay, we're optimistic. What are the early signs then? I was looking at the standards document and seeing who'd collaborated. And it's always fun seeing the names and the companies that are there. But can you name drop a few of the companies that you collaborated with on the standard? And then, you know, maybe this doesn't necessarily mean they're introducing products based on that. But I'm interested in who you've been working with on it.
Yeah, so the working group had quite a few members, you know, the usual suspects working on GS1 standards, but also more than this. So in terms of the usual suspects, you have the big players out there as the Nestle, the P&G, the PepsiCo, Coca-Cola, and so on.
I think Johnson & Johnson as well.
Johnson & Johnson, yeah. And then the retailers, Walmart and others, European retailers, Carrefour, Yeah.
Bosch. And I have the advantage of knowing that I was going to ask you that. So I kind of just jotted down H&M and
H&M.
Was Carrefour there? I'm not sure.
I believe so, yeah.
And then you have vendors as well. So, you know, how are things looking in terms of vendor support? So everything supports EPCIS now?
Yes. Yeah, we were supporting it very early on. It's not the core of our model. It's not necessarily EPCIS, but we support EPCIS inbound and outbound. That's the idea, right? We add to the standard. We add more because we need it for things like authentication and so on. But we support inbound and outbound, yeah.
And other vendors that you want to reference, people like Choice?
Well, yeah, you have lots of big corp vendors. You know, the IBMs, the SAP out there. Then you have specialized companies that are basically that have dedicated their entire workforce on EPCIS. And then you have companies of the size of Digimarc, everything. You have a few others like Axway and so on.
So it's looking good. People want, if you're going to have adoption, then people need choices. Otherwise, they get a little skittish. So anything else we should talk about? I want to talk about Digimarc and what's life is like now that, but anything more that we need to talk about with EPCIS before we...
Well, maybe in terms of traction and the early market signs, I'm also very, very enthusiastic because, yeah, there were other people in this working group than the usual suspects. There were a number of startups. There were also a number of blockchain-related companies.
Yes.
Which is new, and it makes sense because a lot of the blockchain use cases beyond cryptocurrencies is about supply chain traceability. And so there are also a number of blockchains out there like Origin Trail, IOTA, that now also support EPCIS data. And it's great because they need that, right? They needed a kind of a common language because these blockchains are fairly incompatible with one another. So having a higher level language was really useful for them. So that was one great thing. And the other great thing is just the feedback, the amount of feedback we got. Like a year ago, I was announcing in another podcast that the standard was going to come out. It took a year. And the reason it took a year from that time to now is community feedback. We had an overwhelming amount of feedback from the community, something that I had never seen on a standard before. And so we needed to process all of that. But it clearly shows there's interest. And that the time is ripe for a traceability data standard.
Yeah, do you want to name drop that podcast? Because I actually started subscribing to it this morning after listening to your interview.
That's getting APIs to work.
That's a good one.
It's one of my favorite podcasts. It would be after yours, though, which I always listen to. And I'm being honest here, not just because I'm in.
Well, that means more to me than I can say. I'm going to start getting emotional now. But that's, it's very cool. So worthwhile catching that. And you go through this if people want a kind of another drink at this to absorb what EPCIS is, then I recommend those podcasts as well.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Just say a bit more about blockchain. So the architecture of how you would integrate EPCIS with blockchain, because a lot of people might think that these are two different things.
Yeah, and to a large extent, they are. Like, one thing that I wouldn't advise anyone to do is just to push every single event in a atomic format that comes from the supply chain to a blockchain, right? That for many reasons, that wouldn't scale. Depending on the blockchain, that could also not be a good idea from a sustainability standpoint, but also from a cost standpoint, knowing like blockchain fees and so on. They're not all blockchains are equal there. You also have private blockchain consortium base where you can afford pushing the actual raw events. But there's a real trend towards routing some of the supply chain data onto the blockchain so that you can basically prove that the data wasn't tampered with, that it was recorded by the people who said they were recording it using digital signatures, like verifiable credentials and tools like this. So essentially, it can add a trust layer on top of an EPCIS scenario. And that's pretty exciting, actually.
And I know you've done a little bit of work with our technology. I mean, Everything was one of our first platform partners. We both had platforms, but they were integrated. I know you've been doing some early work on integrating EPCIS as supported by Everything with Williart. How can you just overview what that would look like, how it would work?
I mean, this was super smooth because, like, if you want a tag that can illustrate the IoT functions of the EPCIS, I don't think there's a better tag than the Williart tag, right? I mean, the Williart pixels are exactly the kind of tags we had in mind when we were designing that part of the standard. So it's a lightweight tag, yet it's something that can record environmental contextual data. So we just made the two platforms talk, and we receive the message in the Williart formats, and we convert them to EPCIS, and then we use that to drive things like inventory, temperature check, and so yeah, it's great. It was very straightforward, actually.
Very cool.
Also, the tech has evolved quite a bit. Like, I had the chance to test both versions, and it's just very impressive how far you've come. I never lost hope. I'm not disappointed.
No, we're really happy with version 2. There's future versions coming down that are going to be even better, but you look at, if I compare it to Windows, like Windows 1, unusable, Windows 2, terrible, Windows 3, you can use this. There's room for improvement. Windows 95, the whole thing just exploded. And I'm not going to say whether we're at Windows 95 or Windows 3, but you can definitely deploy, I would say, hundreds of millions of these tags and have profound changes to your business. But there's also some major improvements coming. Actually, the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, I wanted to ask your opinion about something, which is, let's put this in the realm of preview market testing. And this is a surprise for you, so feel free to not comment. But, I've always been passionate about physical web. We had Scott, who was the author of Physical Web, on one of our early podcasts when he was working at Google. And one of the things that we're starting to experiment with now at Williart is essentially a reboot of physical web. We're not quite sure what to call it. We're thinking, trusted physical web, is because there's a level of encryption and a new approach to classification and making sure that you don't get some of the content there that basically killed the original physical web. But we're also thinking of calling it a living web, because, if you have a URL that's being broadcast from Everything around you, then it's about life, and it brings things to life and allows you to interact. And our idea is, we have a few restrictions. Our core product, these guys are on a mission, so we can't change the core product. Our core product broadcasts an encrypted ID. So what we're considering building is kind of a proxy layer that maps Wiliot IDs to URLs. So it could be a digital link, could be something that your nephew knocks up on a web page. And the idea is we open this up to any browser that wants to include it, but we'll have a reference open source browser that people can play with. And then, you know, you go to the zoo and you have a URL being broadcast from each of the exhibits. You go to the airport and you can order things from your seat and then go to the concession and pick it up. You're stuck in a queue waiting to order beer at the Red Hot Chili Peppers concert at Petco Park, something that I was doing last week, then you can click on that link, order, and then, you know, just pick it up. So there's a ton of things that you could do. You know, rather than having Google ranking at the heart of this, which sounded like a good idea to me when I first heard it, but didn't work well because it's kind of non-deterministic. As a publisher, are people going to see my link? Maybe they will, maybe they won't. And then you can get like, really not very nice content that comes through and pollutes the experience. And so we're thinking of using more of the App Store model where it's classified and you can subscribe to, if you suddenly want to see all the URLs from furniture, you can. But if you then, you know, just want to see things from restaurants, you can do that. And if you want adult content, you can do that. But by default, you wouldn't. And so all that kind of approach where there's some automation and some approval. And basically, we'd give the tags away and just charge $1 a month for one of these things. And then eventually less if you start putting URLs on strawberries. You don't want to be paying that. But that's just to kind of get it started. So I wanted your reaction, advice, feedback. What do you think?
I mean, that's super exciting. I've always been a big fan of the physical web. But as you said, it was probably killed in the egg by just that turning that into a spamming tool. And that was very sad because it could have been really, really a great tool. But again, back to one thing we're talking about is, you know, we got to make this right. We got to make it work right. We're going to help. We're going to make it help people and not spam them.
Absolutely.
So I think, we need better filtering. You need to be able to proactively say what you're interested in. And we need some governance around that to make sure it's somehow checked. I would be all in for reviving the physical web. I was actually quite sad to see it disappear.
Yeah, me too. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I used it myself, San Diego Airport. We put the physical web tags on signage and we actually did an ABC test. We had QR codes, we had URLs, short form URLs. We had NFC tags. And we had physical web beacons. They were from Fi, from the Beacon folks, and they didn't cost a lot. It's like $20 or something like that. You stick it on there. And, it was very new technology, but it was amazingly successful. Order of magnitude better results. If you added up all of the click-throughs we got from URLs, from QR codes, and from people getting up out of their seat and tapping the sign, add all that up, multiply it by 10. That was the conversion rate and the visits that we got to the Good Traveler website, which is a carbon offsetting scheme, which is kind of hard to get people to visit that website, but it was great. So that convinced me this works. And then I was like traveling in Australia and seeing physical web broadcasts from the post office kiosks. I was in Italy, saw physical web on tourist signs. London buses were using it for the schedule, and it was even in Broadway.
There were some great use cases. Unfortunately, it's the other use cases that killed it, right? But there were some great use cases. And
Well, we'll have to talk about it more offline. I'd love to get your advice and input about how we can get that classification and have some kind of, it's tricky. How do you want to avoid, you want to have the right governance around making sure that it's streamlined and so forth. Okay. So I guess that was a little bit of a surprise preview. I wasn't expecting to cover that.
Good one.
Tell us a bit about Digimarc and everything, and why did you do it? And you were one of the co-founders of of everything? And why did Digimarc decide that they wanted to do it?
Yeah, you know, we had been running everything for about 10 years, a bit more than 10 years, actually. And we needed a step change. I think we had a, you know, we always had a pretty good product, pretty good cutting edge tech, but we needed more market reach. And so we were looking at basically getting acquired or merging with a bigger entity. And as Digimarc offered to acquire us, this was great because they had been a partner for many years before. So we were actually working with digital watermarks from Digimarc for many years. We were bringing them to the web and bringing them to our customers. So it was a pretty easy integration. At least on the paper. Then of course it's always challenging, but the two teams were really, really aligned in terms of the vision. And they had the tech side, we had more the software side. So it made absolute sense and has been a great journey, actually.
Yeah, I love that technology. We've had them on the podcast a while back. I actually, you know, decades ago, even considered joining the company. I think I got into wireless instead, so worked out. But I love what they were doing, and they can hide data and fingerprint in an image, and you can't even see it, but your phone can. So it's a great way of having a Siri. It's another carrier, so it would be. It totally makes sense. And so the plan in terms of the future, how does it change your plans? I see the Everything website is still there. Is it still going to be, how do you plan to run the two companies?
Yeah, at least for a period, right? I mean, the integration is still pretty fresh. It happened beginning of 2022. So, you know, and it takes a long time. So it's, I don't know whether the Everything brand will disappear. Probably not, but in terms of websites, we will merge them. Mm-hmm. In terms of product, I don't expect many changes. Part of what we also want as a common company now is to support as many tagging technologies as possible. Whereas Digimarc had a strong focus on watermarking. Part of the acquisition is also about ensuring that we can tap into as many tagging technologies so that we can cover as many consumer products as possible. And I find that quite exciting because that's one of the things Everything is bringing to the table. The integration with the Wheelots or any other tagging technology that's out there. We always wanted to be agnostic of the tagging tech.
Pretty good. Well, I love what both companies are doing. And if you can be better together, then that's great from my perspective. So, Dom, this is the part of the show where we talk a bit more informally. Not that the first part of the show was particularly formal, but you mentioned that you just moved. You're still in Switzerland, I assume, are you?
Yeah, I'm still based in Switzerland, but I moved closer to the mountains, which is one of the things I really love in life, is being close to mountains and climbing them. So
yeah,
makes me really happy to be around here. And, you know, nowadays you can do that because you work remotely, so it doesn't really matter where you work from.
Yeah, I was interested in how do you manage a career where, you know, the first time we spoke was we were in the East End of London in a very cool kind of office there, which I'm assuming is still there. And now you're part of Digimarc. And so they're up in, as far as I remember, just outside of Portland, Oregon. How do you manage this kind of multi-location thing? Is it a stress or is it a bonus for you?
Well, I mean, that was a reality almost through my entire career. I think except for the early years of my career, I had to deal with different time zones, sometimes very different time zones, like now between Europe and Portland. You just get used to it. You know, you adapt, you change your day schedule,
yeah.
Just start a bit later and work a little bit later.
But are you traveling a lot?
Much less than I used to. Like, yeah, I think early on in my career, I was traveling almost every week, but that isn't the norm anymore. And I'm pretty happy about that, to be honest. I think we've become a lot more efficient and the digital technologies have improved so much, the video conferencing tools and the No, I think it's a better work environment than it used to, I'd say.
And you got your doctorate. It seemed like part of the time you were at MIT. Is that correct? So you were straddling Switzerland and the East Coast of the United States.
Yeah. I was actually doing my PhD at ETH and then a postdoc at the Otto ID Labs at MIT, which is a great experience, actually.
Yeah, that's like one of the meccas for Otto ID, isn't it? We should go on a pilgrimage.
Although Zurich is also not too bad in terms of, it's also one of the Otto ID labs. So I had the chance to visit two of the best Otto ID labs out there, I'd say. Yeah.
So when you say it's an Otto ID lab, it's part of the MIT organization or it's a different Otto ID
lab? No, actually, Otto ID labs are international and they were founded by MIT and ETH Zurich and then a few other universities joined. So it's not like we know, of course, the MIT one is the most well-known, but there are quite a few other Otto ID labs out there and they're part of a network.
Oh, that's interesting. So what does that mean to join the network? Because I was actually talking to someone who runs a lab that could be called an Otto ID lab. And he was like thinking about the name. And I'm like, you should call yourself Otto ID lab. And he's like, well, there's already one of those, but there's already many. So if this other lab wanted to join, what would they have to do? Is there like a secret handshake or what's it?
Yeah, I guess they'll have to contact one of the main labs and become part of the family.
Interesting. Okay. Well, constantly learning. And so what was it like, because you did part of your education at Lancaster University.
How come I end up north of England with probably the heaviest rainfalls in the world?
Yeah.
I loved it there. I really loved Lancaster. It was, you know, again, close to the Lake District, so I was able to climb some mountains of a totally new kind compared to the Alps. So I love that. And also more in terms of more professional career wise, Lancaster University is pretty well known in a space called ubiquitous computing, which is pretty close to Otto ID technologies as well. There are a couple of very well-known professors there. So it was great to be able to do part of my master's there. Yeah.
So what is ubiquitous computing?
Ubiquitous computing is probably the, you know, how we called IoT before IoT was a thing, right? So it's about computer waving into the fabric of everyday objects, as Mark Weiser used to say. He was one of the founders of the ubiquitous computing trend. And it's basically about computers everywhere, looking at computers beyond the places where we know we have computers like desktops and laptops and phones. So it's really looking at computers everywhere from RFID to embedded to typically the kind of things Willard develops as well. Could be tagged as ubiquitous
computers. Yeah, maybe I should be using that as a descriptor as we kind of search around for things to kind of articulate this massive change from where we are, which is already pretty amazing, all the things that are connected to the internet. But I don't know, if you had to guess, what proportion of things do you think are connected to the internet? If you had to come up with a percentage, because I talk about this in terms of what I see as a sea change that's about to happen. And, you know, in my opinion, you quickly kind of get some numbers in your head because you look at, you know, the number of things that are connected today and obviously phones. So there's you know, 1 or 2 billion of those. And then you have RFID, which I would claim is sort of connected, but generally, you know, most RFIDs intermittently connected. It's really kind of a snapshot. And then you've got things like the LoRaWAN stuff, that's the gas meters and so forth. So I'm really interested in, if you were to come up with a percentage, what would you say the proportion of things, given that there's all these other things like punnets of strawberries and vials of vaccine and passports and all these other things that could quite reasonably be connected and benefit the human race in terms of reducing counterfeit and theft and wastage and all of these things that are killing us. So what's the percentage, Dominic Gunard?
The percentage is tiny.
Less than 1%, right? Would you say?
Yeah, definitely.
Thank goodness for that. Because that's what I've been saying. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah, I'd say so as well. You could connect trillions of things. And we're so far from that today. Yeah.
I mean, we think the internet has changed a lot. But what's it going to be like when, you know, when if you flip it, I don't know whether we'll ever get to 99% of things are connected. But if you look at everything that is of significance, and I really think it's hard for us to imagine human beings. You know, the best we get is science fiction, isn't it? That gives us a kind of a sense of what things are going to be like. You have to become like childlike to really envisage it. If you get serious, then it, you know, you get shut down. You can't even envisage what it's going
to
be like.
That's right. But back to one of the principles of ubiquitous computing, I think it's very important that this is done in the right way. There's a principle called calm technology. It's the idea that these technologies should not get in our way. They should really be serving us and helping us. And, you know, it shouldn't be clumsy. It shouldn't disconnect. It shouldn't be, you shouldn't be debugging your whatever pack of strawberry or whatever CPG item you have fully connected. And that's very important. And that's our responsibility to make this technology calm and seamless. And it needs to work super well.
Well, hopefully, in our time machine, we did a really good job in the EPCS conversation, and that helped that. So I have a couple of other questions to ask you. How did you get your Wikipedia page? Was that like a fan, someone who read your research and said, this guy needs to have a Wikipedia page? Or did you ask a friend to do it? Or because, you know, I research people that come on the podcast, and you have one of the best web presences of any of the guests that have been on, because you've got your website, you've got your Wikipedia page, and your LinkedIn page, which is normally like one of the first things, is like way down on the screen.
Yeah, I don't know about the Wikipedia page. I don't know if I really deserve one, but it actually happened when, you know, I sort of kicked off with other researchers the Web of Things community and the Web of Things research field. And there were a couple of students doing their master thesis or bachelor thesis, I don't remember. And they said, we'd like to create a Wikipedia page for you first. I think the first version they did is in French. And actually, if you look at the French version, it has a lot more details. Then I wrote a couple of books, and the editor said, well, you know, it's actually pretty good to have a Wikipedia page. So, you know, then we kept it.
Cool. And yeah, it makes sense.
I don't know.
And then, of course, the last question I have to ask you is about music. And I think I sprung this on you at the last minute, and we haven't really talked about it, so maybe you haven't given it any thought. But I'm just looking to see what you chose. I can't see it in my notes, but I remember one of the songs was Kraftwerk. Do you remember what the other songs were that you chose?
Back then?
Yeah. Across the Universe, the Beatles.
Probably something electronic.
The Girl and the Robot by...
Rockstar.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought I was gonna be allowed to choose three more, so I was looking forward to it.
No, you're allowed to choose three more. Yeah, it's the bonus of coming on. So what are your other
things? That's pretty cool. Well, I still have an edge for electronic music, so this time I went for three electronic songs. One of them would be Touch from Daft Punk. I was a big fan of Daft Punk when they actually decided to separate in 2021. It was a drama for me, especially because I never managed to see them live, and I always wanted to, but the tickets sold out so quickly. It was just impossible to get access. And that's a song that's not super well known from them, but I really like it. It's just...
I was listening to it less than a week ago. Putting my new turntable through its paces, and it sounds amazing on vinyl.
There you go. And second one would be Sky and Sand by Paul Kalkbrenner. It's just one of my favorite electronic songs ever. Just feels good. Uh-huh. I love listening to it.
Excellent. I'm going to check it out.
And the last one would be, because I think in the beginning you were asking what songs would you take if you were on a journey to
That's
Mars,
right?
Right?
So yes.
I was thinking I need a classic as well. So it would be Children from Robert Miles, because that would remind me of my, you know, childhood. And that's probably one of the songs that got me into electronic music.
Very cool.
Early on. Yeah.
Well, thanks for that selection. And I'm pleased that you you should really get another three, because this is your third time on. But we don't have time for that. Dominic, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
No problem. It was great. Thank you.
So that was Dominic, someone who I really admire. He's a great person to work with, and you know, I think is an example of a visionary. Do check out the other podcast interviews we had with him on Digital Link and on the book that he wrote that helps explain how web technologies can be used with IoT. It's very practical, very accessible. And please let other folks know that you are listening to this podcast and that they might find it helpful or useful, if that's what you think. Hopefully you do. You stayed till the end, so I'm guessing that's the case. So thanks for doing that. Thanks for watching most and listening most of all. Be safe and see you next time.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.